Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Standing by, the Terry and Ted podcast is sponsored by the UPS Store Canada.
I like to tease Poseidon because he points at me when we're ready to go, and I just look at him with a blank stare, and he wonders if I'm okay. So we're starting then?
Yeah, the lead stare, as it's called.
Hi, I'm Terry DeMonte. That's Ted Bird. It's the Standing By Podcast, Season 7. We're excited about having a new season and excited about our guest today, too. Oh, boy, have we got some stories to tell. We've all had some common experiences, as it were.
We have.
And we're all free to talk because we live in the land of podcasts.
That's right. Well, and we're all unemployed. Yeah.
You're not so free yet. Your lawsuit is still pending.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. Well, it's not a lawsuit yet, but stand by.
It's going to be.
Go, Zappy, go.
The podcast is sponsored. Our title sponsor is the UPS Store Canada with over 380 locations. Somebody asked me how many locations there were, and even the guy who runs the company isn't sure because they open so many stores. They're in so many communities across the country, whether you live in the Maritimes or you're listening in British Columbia or you're just outside of Winnipeg and you've got to ship something from Brandon or...
If you're up on Hudson's Bay and you have some whale blubber that you want to ship to Aunt Effie in Nanaimo... The UPS store has got you covered.
The UPS store is a place that's run by an independent entrepreneur, and they deal with a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of people running businesses from homes, like our guest. And when you need help with things like labels and shipping and packaging and, you know, everything from, like I said, labels to packing tape to... You know, deciding how big a box you're going to need and how well it should be packed. If you got stuff that's fragile, you just go in the store and tell them what your problem is, and they'll solve it. If you run a business from your home and you want a separate address, they can get you a mailbox. And like I said, the people that run the UPS stores are people in your community, so you get to know them, and you can pick up your packages there. I mean, It's much like the Livermans do on the tip of the eye or off the tip of the eye.
The Livermans run the UPS franchises on Don Quixote in Ile Perot and in the Walmart in Vaudreuil, although that one's temporarily closed because of a fire. But Jason Liverman told me they're aiming for a July reopening, if I'm not mistaken.
Head to the upsstore.ca and you can find everything about helping not just shipping but with your business and find the location near you. And while we're at it, accommodations and travel assistance provided by
the Fairfield Inn and Suites by Marriott at the Dorval Airport.
Introduce our guest, Ted. I'm very excited.
Our guest is Freeway Frank DiPaolo, a longtime Montreal and Canadian radio personality who's been doing what we do for just about as long as we've been doing it. Frank, I was listening to a podcast earlier today that Frank was on just to get some background. You started doing the overnight show on the old 990 Hits.
That's right, on Green Avenue. First of all, great to be here. I can't believe I'm here watching you two.
This is so much fun.
I don't even have to speak. I can just sit back and watch you guys. It's amazing.
We worked down the hall from each other for a bunch of years and became friendly. And
if you started at 990 Hits doing the overnight show in 1990, him and I were doing the morning show on Shones, so we would have crossed paths on a nightly basis or a morningly basis.
Exactly. I don't know if you remember me from back then because they gave me the name because I couldn't use my Italian last name because that was taboo at the time.
Yeah.
I was Frank Kelly on the radio.
What year,
on 990 Hits and then oldies 990.
What year was that?
So I started when Susan Davis.
Okay.
Was the program director. Yeah. Then it was Bob, I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
Some guy named Bob. Then it was Chris St. Clair.
Yeah.
I remember him.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Weather Network.
Yeah. Exactly. Yes. So I started in 1990. It was 990 hits. A year later, it became Oldies 990, and I was still there for 3 years before I went to Vancouver.
And you, I was listening to the same podcast because Ted sent it to me. We should give that guy a shout out. What's his name? The podcast?
The podcast, your buddy Olivier.
Yeah.
Oh, Olivier. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome, awesome things. Anyway, I'm sorry, Olivier. I don't have it in front of me, but we were listening this morning, and I was not surprised to learn. You were like me. You were a kid and you wanted to do it.
Yes.
And you just went after it.
I grew up listening to, so the first recollection I have of listening to a great radio personality, because we were listening, we were talking about this before coming on here, was Ralph Lockwood.
Yeah.
And I was maybe 7, 8 years old, the old days of CKGM. And then when we hit the 80s, the early 80s, it was Aaron Rand.
Yep.
Then Terry DeMonte. Then Ted Bird came in. And these were all, in my opinion, you were all legendary broadcasters.
That's awfully kind.
And I'm not just saying to blow smoke your way, because that doesn't exist anymore.
No.
So when I started, it was the creme de la creme of broadcast.
Yeah.
And today we're left with the empty little carton with no cream inside.
Yeah.
It's literally.
I was watching a thing the other night on YouTube. James Taylor was talking about the music business. And the way he described the music business when he got in and the music business today, he said, in my day when I started, he said, you needed somebody to help open the door and get you through the door, and then the rest was up to you.
Mm-hmm.
He said, today, the door is wide open, but when you get in there, there's millions of people in there, and you have to figure out how to get, you know, how to navigate that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's happened in the radio business, in the radio era that you and I worked in, and I'm going to sound like an arsehole, but you had to get good at the craft, practice the craft, go to a small town, get better, mm-hmm. work hard, do the all-night show, and slowly you worked your way up, because if you were going to sit in the same room with somebody like Ralph Lockwood or be in the same radio station like somebody like George Balkan, you had to have really good broadcasting chops.
Yeah.
Those days are gone.
Absolutely. But, you know, when I started, I had zero broadcasting chops.
Yeah.
I was a kid from the East End.
Yeah, but you started on overnight.
Yeah. Yes,
right?
I started on overnights. Yeah. But I remember the program director telling me, you know, you got to go to a small town.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not going to a small town. Yeah. My parents are going to kill me. I'm Italian.
I can't.
I'm going to Barry, Italy? No, Barry, Ontario. Fucking get out of my face. Like, so.
No,
exactly. So he said, listen, what do you do? How do you practice? And I said, at home into a microphone, into my old York stereo system.
Yeah.
Or I do a weekly show on CIRL, which was the Concordia radio station at the time. I was like 18, 19 years old.
But that's practicing the craft.
Yes. And he said, just keep doing it and give me tapes. And eventually one day I gave him a tape and he goes, this is pretty good.
Yeah.
And then a couple of weeks pass and we were at a meeting with all jocks back in the day when we had these legendary jocks all sitting down, and I'd be in amazement just being in the same room as all these people. And they threw me the schedule, and I was on the schedule, Frank, right across. And I thought I was opping, right? Oh. And I go, am I opping the overnight? They're like, no, you're on the overnight. Wow. And that's it. That's when it started.
And that's another thing that's, you know, I know this is inside baseball stuff, but that's another thing that's changed about the business. I remember getting the all-night show in Winnipeg when I was 19 or 20, and I was so scared. And, you know, I was thanking the program director for his faith in me, and I was, you know, I'm going to do a good job, and I'm so nervous, and he listened to me talk, and he said, hey, it ain't the Tonight Show. Just relax and you know, try and figure it out and do your best. That was the minor leagues of radio, and now there are no all-night shows anymore. It's all on computer. So there's nowhere for young people to practice the craft and go get better at it, but that's okay, because they're not looking for people who get better at it. They just want people in the room. room.
Yeah, well, the craft has been devalued.
Yes.
And
yes.
Into a state of mediocrity. And I think that that changed when the big radio families sold to big corporations.
I agree.
Waters family from Chum and the Slate family from Standard.
Yeah.
When they sold, and I would have sold too if someone said, I got $1 billion for you here. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And that's what you got.
You.
Over a billion.
Yeah.
Gary,
yeah.
I would have sold too. But what that meant was that the people who were those families owned radio stations, both ends of the business were nurtured.
Yep.
The creative end and the business end, because they were broadcasters. They were professional broadcasters, the Slates and the Waterses, and they understood that, you know, each side of the business nurtures the others. The big corporations don't think that way. No. They're just money. They're just bottom line.
I remember in 2013 when Bell bought Astral.
Yeah.
I went upstairs. I was living in Little Italy at the time, and I got to the top of the stairs. My wife opened the door, and I said, Bell just bought Astral. She looked at me, and she goes, oh, fuck. What does she know about broadcasting? Well, but she knows from the years of me talking.
You know what? I had been hired. I was in Calgary, and I got hired to come back to Chaume, and I was in my rented place. I'd only been back a month. I was in my rented place, and I got the phone call saying, Bell, it's going to be announced tomorrow that Bell is buying the company. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, I said, that's the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
I knew. I hadn't even started.
To him. I said it to the same him.
Yeah.
And he tried to comfort me. And I said, no, I had experience with these guys in Calgary.
He tried to tell me the same thing that, you know, it's a new blah, 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 blah. And I said, bullshit. They are a big corporation. That's just, you know, they may as well have bought like a ball bearing company. You know, they were just looking to add to their portfolio. And I thought they bought the broadcasting company to be a color flyer for their other businesses. Mm-hmm. And that's proved to be true. But anyway, we're here to talk about you.
We are. I was loving that conversation.
we're going to go back to it because I first want to talk about you had a national profile, Frank. You were in Toronto, you were in Calgary, you were in Vancouver. Did I miss a market?
No, and Montreal. And in between, when I was in Toronto, I did host the Canadian Top 20.
Yeah.
It was a syndicated show. So
Cross-country?
Sirius XM. It was actually Gary Slate who called me into his office and said, I'm starting Iceberg Radio on Sirius at the time before it was Sirius XM.
Yeah.
And I want you to do the midday show. And I'm like, how am I going to do that? He goes, just record it.
Yep.
Fuck it. Just record it. How much you pay me? Don't worry about that. So...
We love you, Gary.
I had a great relationship with Gary.
So
a lot of people didn't like.
No. Listen,
he treated us well.
I loved Gary Slate.
Me too.
I love. He has a place Gary in my heart. Slate.
Never missed.
Yeah.
Terry, I'm not making this up. He got me tickets for every game.
Yeah, I believe
in the 6.5 years that I was in Toronto
when the Habs
came
in. When
the Habs, every single game, and I have them all.
He demanded excellence.
Yes,
and he was tough on
people.
And
he rewarded it.
And
he was
exactly,
very tough. Yeah.
He was tough on people that didn't have the passion and didn't want to put the work in.
Yes,
but the first time that I met him was a late night in a hotel room, and I said to him, "Why do you want me to come and work for you so much?" And he said, "Because I want the best people in the business to work for me." And the broadcast business was in great shape when him and his father were in it.
They did a fantastic job.
And they did a fantastic job. Anyway, so we love you, Gary. like he's going to hear this.
I guess said it.
we've both said it to him. He knows how we feel. Then Calgary after, or is it Calgary and Toronto or Toronto and Calgary?
Montreal, 3 years when I started out of university. I was barely finished Concordia. 9.5 years in Vancouver, then back across the country. I moved across the country 4 times. Toronto for almost 7, Calgary for 4. Met my wife in Toronto, came with me to Calgary. That's where she's from, Albertan, born and raised, but spent half her life in Toronto, then back for the Virgin gig. Around the time, maybe a year before you came.
Yeah.
Because we were in Calgary at the same time, and it's weird because we used to hang out
every now
and then here in Montreal. But in Calgary, we never got together.
I know.
Which
and they told me this. You know, there's a Montreal guy working down the dial, and it was just strange that we never got together.
Yeah. I was like, it's Terry. Of course, I don't know him, but I know Terry.
Yeah. Here's something petty. Yeah. You know, today, because I know a lot of the kids in the business, if you get offered a job, if you're working, say, in Calgary, you get offered a job in Winnipeg, They don't pay moving expenses anymore.
They don't?
No.
Wow. What?
Yeah, get your own. Yeah, take care of your own move. Yeah, how about that? That's nice, eh? Yeah.
Well, go find someone else.
Yeah, well, the big companies, they're down to their last $3, eh?
Yeah. And we know because we've moved so many times.
Yes.
They pay everything.
But it was a given.
Yeah,
I mean, if you're a VP of Earth Parf Incorporated and they want to move you to Chicago, that's not even a discussion.
Of course.
Yeah.
You know, if you're moving me to Chicago,
But they were good about that back in the day.
Back in the day, they were.
So my wife is not from Quebec and she's waiting. She's counting the minutes for, that we leave, get the hell out of here. I'm here. She loves her mother-in-law, my mother, my family. My mom's
it's
turning
It's a big not, adjustment, though, yes. Alberta to here.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But she's been here now for 13 years and we've been married for 10 years. And, I told her, I said, the next time we do move, it's going to cost us
for the first time.
So I go, think about that before we make that move.
So I want to, I know you were in BC for a while and, we could talk about the different markets, but we're a Montreal focused podcast.
Yeah.
And I think people are interested in Ted and I were talking about it in the car. You are working for, this is the way radio stations work. There are three radio stations in the building. There's an AM station and two FM stations. And the AM station and the rock station and the top 40 station. And the top 40 station in Frank's era was referred to as the cash machine. It was the ATM because it made so much money. And Virgin, a lot of people don't know this, but Virgin or what was it before Virgin?
Mix.
Right.
See, Mix 96, but I was never there.
You weren't there.
No.
Virgin.
We were there.
Yeah.
You and I were there.
That's right. We worked there. Who was there? Oh, yeah, we were. Virgin paid a lot of the bills for Shome and for CJD.
Yeah.
And
that wasn't a myth. That was true.
No,
right?
This is just business fact. Yeah. And we understood that, and I hated that, but that's the way it was. And once in a while, the boss would remind me that, the cash machine's down the hall. That's why they have the big contests, et cetera, et cetera. And everything's coming up roses, and then you're fired.
Yeah.
So what happened?
I wish I knew exactly what happened, but from what I was told, it was restructuring. So they decided that was what they told us. And I immediately have two good lawyers, Ted, just in case you were talking about meeting.
Yeah.
My lawyers are really good.
I got savvy.
Yeah. So, look, it was the most depressing day of my life.
An unbelievable gut punch.
Yeah, never thought.
Out of the blue, Frank?
Out of the blue.
Completely now, out of the blue?
I know quite a few people in the city like you guys do, having grown up here. I had heard rumors of people saying things, but I didn't want to believe it.
How were your ratings?
Our ratings were still very good, but compared to where they weren't as high as they were back in, let's say, 2017, 2018. We noticed a difference when things started to change in about 2017, and this is no diss to Lee because Lee's a friend of mine, but when they added Lee to the morning show and it became Freeway Natasha and Lee, things started to change.
Right.
And I've told Lee about this. I've talked to him about this.
And also, it's the nature of the game.
Yeah.
Things go up, things go down.
Right.
But all the very successful morning shows are long-time morning shows.
Right.
The company stands behind you.
Yes. And we had started, Natasha and I, together. I started with Lisa Player, when I first started. It was fantastic. Then she decided she hated radio and the radio business. Gee, I wonder why. And she took off. And Natasha was taking her place. I thought she was great. And we had the most incredible chemistry of anyone I've ever worked with.
Yeah.
And that's the way it was until August 7th, 2019. You never forget the dates. And we just sideswiped,
Do you think it was driven by money?
Isn't everything?
I think so, because the people that they brought in, and there's no diss towards, towards them, but they brought in younger people. I think it was ageism in a way. The guy was 10 years younger than me. She was 15 years younger than Natasha. Maybe they felt the direction of the format was headed younger, not older. We were getting older. We had started. I was in my late 30s, and now all of a sudden I was approaching 50. Maybe that was part of it. But that's not what they said when we went, you know, into our meetings with the brass from Bell and my lawyers, because I seek legal counsel immediately because people are like, okay, this is not right. We were in the middle of a contract, in the middle of a deal, and you can't do that. And so then we went into arbitration, and then COVID happened. So arbitration is where it should have settled. It didn't. And then 15 months later, it finally settled. And we were all going through COVID at the time. It was the most lowest point of my life. Not somebody that gets depressed easily. I saw their true colors. I saw how evil a company could be, especially a company that promotes mental health, Bell Let's Talk, and what they were able to do. Never thought they could do that to us. I never thought it. But I always believed. There was always a part of me. I mean, wasn't born yesterday. I always say maybe the day before, but not yesterday. I always felt like that day could come because everyone's replaceable.
Yeah,
but I didn't want to believe it because I didn't think our morning show was still performing, still number one in many demographics, but it wasn't at the level it was when I took over in 2011 or even in 2016, 2017, 2018. The climate had been changing. But then again, radio revenues were down across the country. So it's not like it was only us. And look at them now. So yeah. Now it's like,
well, and it's also completely different. You were embedded in the community.
Absolutely.
You worked hard in the community and you represented the brand well and worked a lot with charities and people loved you. And
Terry, I was everywhere.
Well, I know. I mean, you and I would go into to have lunch into Little Italy and it was like walking around with Bradley Cooper. Everybody knew. No, everybody knew who you were. Hey, Frank! Yeah. Like it was a really nice, it was the way, that's the way you do a morning show. That's the way you get involved in the community like that.
Yeah.
And that's something that the old guard, the Gary Slates of the world, understood. That's the way it works. And that's how you build a loyalty and an audience and the people that stay with you and talk about you for years after you've retired.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Ter.
Yeah.
You find out who your friends are in those situations. Did people rally around you?
Many people did. But then I found out who my true friends were after the whole, pandemic period and what happened after the fact. Mm-hmm. I think during it, many people came, were our biggest supporters, our clients, sponsors. There was a heavy reaction on social media. I think if you followed it. And then when we finally settled and it was done with, an article came out in the paper and the Gazette and wrapped it all up. I think we had the sympathy of our biggest, there's no doubt we had a big following. We had a big audience over the years. But then I ruined all that with my podcast.
We'll get to that. But what I want to know, without poking my nose where it doesn't belong.
No, you can poke.
How long did arbitration go? And tell me you made them pay.
Well, yeah, I did make them pay. We made them pay. And they had no choice but to settle because we weren't letting up.
And you weren't in the wrong.
They were just going to keep by dragging it as long as they did. They're like, they're going to run out of money and all that.
Yeah.
But I had made a deal with my lawyers. They were in it. They're like, no, we're going to get them. And that didn't help me. It definitely blacklisted me forever working with this company again. Not that I would ever work with them again.
Why would you? I would never
consider it, right? But then I thought maybe there's going to be other radio companies that would stay away from, these people are trouble, right? Yeah. I remember hearing from people in the past, never get a lawyer, never sue because you're going to burn bridges. And I was like, burn what bridges? They know my character. They know what I'm about. I'm not a bad person. And this is business. Yeah, it's business for them. Business. It's business for me.
Also,
I'm
going to get, why should they be allowed to do that?
Yeah, exactly.
You sat at a table in good faith and organized and agreed to a contract that they put their signature on.
Right.
And just because they're a big, giant corporation and they try and starve you out, how is that right?
Yeah.
Fuck that.
And we had built a loyal audience over the years.
Yes.
And how, Terry, they would say, I'm sure you heard this in your last few years of radio, you have to wear your heart on your sleeve. People have to be passionate about you. Bring them into your life. Talk about private issues. And I'm sure you weren't always eager to do that, right? And it's like, okay, now I'm talking about my wife and I trying to have kids, things I didn't want to talk about.
Yeah.
All this, and how much the audience matters. And then one day, boom, you're gone. And now that the audience doesn't matter anymore.
And I get it. You have big boy pants. I have big boy pants. It's business. I understand it. Mm-hmm. But honor your commitment.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to do that to me, and this is what I don't understand.
Right.
If you're going to do that to me, I get it. I know how the business works. Nothing goes on forever. But have some honor, for Christ's sake. You know, come to me and say, we're going in another direction. We think you're, you know, they can't say you're aging out, but we're going in another direction and we're going to honor the contract that we agreed upon 2 years ago. Here's a check. Please go home.
Thank you.
And what they do, what a lot of people don't know is they try to get you to sign a document before you leave the building that basically says we can screw you. And you have to sign this before you leave. And if you're smart, you say I'm not signing anything without legal advice.
Which is exactly what I did.
Yes.
And then the first thing,
because they did that to you.
Of course they did that. Yeah, they put had the papers ready. Yeah, they opened it up. Yeah, and they put it in front of me. You have to sign this. And I was like, I'm not signing anything. I go, I'm going to get a lawyer. And they looked at me and they're like, okay.
Yeah.
And I go, they'll contact you.
And then
I was hoping Natasha did the same thing, and she did.
Yeah, so
she
they try and intimidate their people by making them think you're making a mistake by getting legal representation. Mm. You're actually protecting your best interests. So at the end of the day, you were happy with the check that came in the mail.
I was happy with the check. I wasn't happy with the departure. Had they said to me, Frank Tash, Wednesday is your last day. We have to make some changes. Yeah. It's a business move. You could say goodbye. I don't know what they were thinking, that maybe I would go rogue and go crazy on the air. It's possible, but I would never.
No,
I would
keep it professional. It's disrespectful.
And that's not what I'm about, okay? Now, all bets are off. I have my podcast. If it ever comes up, I'm talking about Bell. I'm going to let them have it every single time. But, that day, I would not have done that because I would have kept it professional, because that's what I am. I'm a professional.
Yeah.
And I would have made sure that the audience understood that it wasn't my decision, but this was a decision that Bell Media was taking, and this is our last show, au revoir.
Yeah.
That's not what they did.
Yeah.
So that was it was painful.
Yeah.
I can't explain, but every time I talk about it,
it's
painful.
Like a sudden death.
It is.
It's like someone calls you up and says, I'm sorry, but your dad just had a heart attack and he's gone.
Right.
What did you say in the car? You said there's the shock and then the grief that sets in. And I don't want to get all sort of artsy fartsy about this, but you know, it's the kind of thing that we did for a living. Not everybody can do. Although everybody in the world has a podcast today, but
everybody can try.
Yeah, everybody can try. But back in the era that Frank worked, and that we worked, it's not a skill that everybody had.
No.
And that's why we were hired and paid to do what we do. And the reason I think that we had that skill, much like you, is we love it so much, and we're so passionate about it. Mm-hmm. And I know you felt this like I did. You feel a connection with your audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no bigger compliment than when somebody says to me, I couldn't get out of the car this morning listening to you and Natasha.
Those are the two things Valerie Galler says. The highest compliment you can be paid as a broadcaster. One is what you just said.
Yeah.
I couldn't get out of the car until you were finished. And the other one is, I feel like I know you.
Yeah. That too?
Yeah, and so it's understandable. It's very emotional. I mean, getting fired from anything is emotional.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you have pride in your work and you love what you do. But there's a special kind of thing when you have a connection with half of the city of Montreal.
Yeah, like I said, I've mentioned it quite a few times on my podcast. Getting fired at any job is trauma.
Yeah.
But in broadcasting, it's the reason why it's personal is because you build this relationship with the audience. Yeah. They're there every morning, like you said, and all of a sudden they're not there. Yeah. So it is personal. You know, when they say it's business,
personal. And that's a two-way street. They're not there, but you're not there either. And I've learned that from recently being dismissed from my job. I'm getting a constant stream of DMs on social media. Hey, Ted, where are you? Hey, I'm sorry, I heard what happened. You know, but people miss us too.
Absolutely.
Big time.
Well, there's something that's interesting about the relationship. You know, the people choose to listen to you and they invite you in. They kind of invite you into your house, into their houses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a woman once say to me, you're in the shower with me every morning. You know, like it's a very personal connection. Yeah. And listeners, you know, the really hardcore listeners feel a connection with you. Mm-hmm. And it's like they open the door one morning to let you in and you're not there anymore. You're gone.
Yeah.
And it's...
There really is nothing like it.
There's nothing like it.
That's what I try to tell people.
Yeah.
I was having this conversation with Poseidon and maybe Pantelis. Podcasting is great.
Yeah.
But podcasting is... That's why it's a challenge.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's a challenge for you
too. Big time.
Because we're learning. This is different. Okay. Yeah. But radio was instant.
Yeah.
Imagine this right now. We're on the radio. People are listening to it in their cars at that moment.
Yes.
Then you break into a song or whatever. Yeah. It's that whole feeling, that whole vibe, that theater of the mind. That in podcasting, you can listen to it anytime you want. It's a beautiful medium, but it's completely different.
I remember, and you probably will relate to this, when I first started, I remember I would sit and I would stare at the mic button because the mic button always glowed red. Right? It glowed red so you didn't accidentally hit it.
Yeah.
And I remember as the song was fading and I would reach for the mic button and I remember the electricity that would jolt through my body when I pushed it.
Yeah.
Because when you push it, the curtain opens on the stage.
Yeah.
And there's no feeling like that. And that, as much as I love doing this, mm-hmm. that isn't here.
No, it's not.
Right? Because I know.
And here you can say fuck.
That's true.
And that feels good.
Yeah.
Well, you can see it on the radio too.
Yeah.
Only once, though.
Yeah. Frank, can I see a 10?
Yeah. You know what? In all those years, I don't think it ever slipped out. I know it didn't slip out. Never, never.
No.
Which
no.
is shocking to me because it regularly appears on my podcast.
Well, and sometimes what was interesting when we first started the podcast, I remember a remark on social media. Somebody said, you know, I can't get used to hearing Terry use bad language.
Really?
Eh? Yeah. And I guess, you know, if you've been listening for 30 years and maybe you assume that, you know, I say caca.
Well, we're not that bad.
Yeah.
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 Poseidon's pretty bad, but we're not bad.
Yeah. Listen.
I'm terrible.
I am honestly.
I didn't want to say.
I re-listen to what I say sometimes, and frankly, I'm quite despicable. If we're being honest,
the whole thing,
but you're likably despicable.
Yeah, I guess. Thank you.
Yeah. Was Mosher here when you did the whole vagina thing? Was
it? Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
No.
Wasn't Mosher? Oh no. Was
that
yes?
Solo. Yeah. Solo. Okay. Solo. Yeah.
Right, what's the whole vagina thing?
Yeah. We won't relive it. It's fine. We got
season 7, episode 2, okay. The vagina thing.
The vagina debacle. Let's talk about our sponsor, Sugar Sammy.
Shall we?
Let's.
Have you seen Sammy's show, Frank?
Not the current one, but I've seen many of them.
Well, he's coming back with You're Gonna Rear 2, and it's already sold out through September of 2024. He's added shows. As Terry likes to say, just because he's added shows and they're not until after the fall of 2024, don't go, oh, we've got time to buy tickets. No, you don't.
He's already sold 130,000 of them.
Yeah.
Give you an idea of how popular the shows are.
You have to go to sugarsammy.com now and get your tickets to see this fabulous show. He truly is a one-of-a-kind entertainer. That's an old hackneyed expression.
Yeah, but
who's he like? Or who is like him? Nobody.
And it's so unique. You know, I remember when I was living in Calgary, Sammy came, called me and said he was doing, and you'll know how popular this is, Frank. You do a Five Nights at the Grandstand.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big deal.
Big deal.
That's a really big deal. At the Stampede, the whole city, when you're in Calgary and it's Stampede week, the whole city shuts down and everybody puts on a cowboy hat and that stupid tie.
And the pancake breakfast.
Yeah, yeah. There's, you know, eat 85,000 pancakes. It's actually quite a special week. And the grandstand show, you know, between the rodeo events is a big deal.
So Sammy played the grandstand during the Calgary Stampede.
Yeah, 5 nights. Wow. Every single night sold out 10,000 people. I forget what the capacity was. And he came to my house and we were sitting in the living room and he said, can I run something by you? And I said, yeah. He said, I'm thinking about doing a bilingual. I said, bilingual. I said, yeah, you know, he said, I'm bilingual. Like, do you think French people would come to, you know, do you think bilingual Quebecers would come to the show? And we started to talk about it. And I said, you know what? This is a really unique idea. I, you know, knowing Quebec the way it is, the way we know it today, you probably would be a hit. Well, Now it's Juste pour rire deux.
Yeah.
And it was a unique idea from a unique guy who was raised in Quebec in a unique set of circumstances. As I say all the time, he's the Bill 101 guy. And
he's the poster boy for Bill 101.
As he said to me in the note that he sent to me the other day, no one is spared. He doesn't give a shit about who he pokes fun at. And he goes just as hard at the Journal as they go after him. But
he's less malicious.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if you've seen the billboards, like even the billboards are hilarious. Ted and I saw him and sat next to Jean-François Lisée.
Oh, very. That's it. Really?
Anyway, hey, JF.
Yeah.
Hey, Doug Bird. Jerry DeMonte.
Comment ça va? SugarSammy.com. Don't miss your gonna rear deux. Sammy is currently on tour in the United States. Busy trying to conquer that market after becoming a huge star in France and all across Canada and in other parts of the planet, too. You know, he speaks three languages.
Punjabi is the third one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When he's out in BC, that's another
really,
story.
Really? Sells out. He does Punjabi shows?
He doesn't. He will speak some Punjabi.
Okay.
And I don't know if he's planning a Punjabi show, but I saw him in Vancouver. He did the bilingual show across the country. And he took the French-English show to Winnipeg, Calgary, Edmonton, and I saw it in Vancouver. And it was amazing. Well, there are ex-Quebecers all across the country, so that really helped.
That reminds me of all the mornings that he'd come on the morning show, and literally, it doesn't matter who the PD was, except for Andre Lallier, who we both had as a program director, God rest his soul, was amazing. I would be warned before Sammy came in, Frank, 3 minutes. I was like, 3 minutes? Like, how the heck am I going to get Sammy to say anything in 3 minutes?
Well, not only that, you've got Sugar Sammy in the studio, for Christ's sake.
So, that's what
I was lucky because...
I know, and then Terry would have him for an hour straight, no music. And I'd say, I go, I love Terry, but I go, well, why can't I get him for even 10 minutes? No, it's not the format, Frank. It's not, okay.
Yeah,
so people don't laugh on Top 40 Radio?
I was lucky. That era was... I had a few more cards in the deck, so to speak.
Yeah.
I could say, if they said to me, Sugar Sammy's coming in, try and keep it to 3 minutes, I would say, okay.
Yep, sure.
I'll do that.
Yeah. do my best.
Let's, out the door.
I'm out the door?
No.
I was like, that's it?
To continue our conversation, out the door, 15 months, takes 15 months. They try and smoke you out, and you win in the end. You know, in terms of settlement, you win. And then do you immediately say, I got a podcast? I got to start a podcast.
Immediately after. I wanted to start a podcast literally a week after I lost my gig. But lawyers, I had two amazing lawyers, worked for the same firm, and they both said to me, you can't. We cannot risk you saying anything.
Did you have income during that 15 months?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah. And then...
Like they were paying out your contract?
They started...
Yeah.
They started. And then they cut it off.
Okay.
As soon as the
lawyers.
The lawyers came in. So
they basically tried to starve you out.
They tried to starve us out. Yeah. Yeah. Both of us. But you know, look, I've always been good with my money. I know if you have a couple of divorces and you have a couple of unfortunate situations, things could go bad financially in terms of that, but I'm still with my wife for the moment. I hope she never leaves me.
Stay, Frank.
Stay, please. Stay. Yeah, so I've always been good with my money, and so I wasn't in a position where I was worried. And I think they were worried that, you know, how long is this going to go, because this is not going to help us.
Yeah, well, eventually, for sure, eventually, their lawyers said to them, look, this guy isn't going away.
No, I wasn't going anywhere.
You got to settle this.
Yeah.
And I know you as a person of forethought, because the day that you and I went to our contracts were both coming to an end. Remember, we went to the flight simulator.
Oh yeah.
And we had a conversation about, you know, radio and our contracts and whatever.
I remember that.
And you were already talking about building a studio at home.
Yes.
So
I was, and but I always had a feeling. Look, at the beginning of 2019, so I lost my gig August during the summer, but at the beginning I started hearing rumblings. Word started to get around, and somebody came up to me and said, so-and-so is taking your gig. And I said, no, so-and-so is going to be doing the afternoon show. They're like, no, he's going to be doing the morning show. I go, when's this happening? I knew the exact date. August 7th. I knew that date. I didn't want to believe it. I told Natasha. She didn't want to listen. I told Lee. They didn't want to listen. I told my old producer, Tom Butto. Didn't want. They're like, Frank, they're not going to do it. I didn't want to believe it. I was like, okay, maybe it's in. Then I heard it from somebody else. I was like, who's spreading these rumors? And then how did they know the specific date? So I came in that morning. I remember you coming in. Do you remember coming into the studio before we lost our gig? You came by to say hi to us. I think maybe you might have known something. I'm not 100% sure.
I would have
inkling or something. But I remember you walking in that morning, talking to both Natasha and I, and we said something to you like, oh, this might be it. You don't remember that?
I don't remember this.
And so that morning, we got off the air, and it happened that exact morning. So I knew that the rumors that I had heard, and I've been telling my wife almost every day for 6 months.
What did I say? Did I say, no, you're out of your mind? Or
like, yeah, I think you said something like, oh, are you crazy? Something like that. But yeah, I thought maybe after he knew something. That was the final farewell.
No. It did. Like I said, to this day, it doesn't make any. I said to Ted in the car this morning, I still don't know what they were thinking.
Right. So it was tough.
Yeah.
It was tough. And I can tell before the end of the shift, we're looking out the window and, you know, it's like the vultures were above, you know, and the prey was the roadkill was on the floor. I could just sense it. Hmm. So I didn't want to believe it. I never really believed it. You asked me that earlier. I never really wanted to believe it, but I knew it was coming. I had a feeling it was coming. So I prepared myself knowing that, you know. Oh,
like I said, good forethought, good instincts, but that doesn't help you get through it.
No, it was tough.
Yeah.
Terry,
yeah.
I've been a pretty stable guy over my life. I went through a bit of a depression. Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind.
Completely understand.
Then COVID hit. We all went through, as a community, as a planet, we all went through tough times, but it was a tough 15 months.
So what's the timeline from the time that, you know, you get punched in the face and it's August 10th, 11th, 12th. So, excuse me, from there, where do you think, okay, it's time to do the drive-by. It's time for me to move on.
I had the logo pretty much done. The final artwork wasn't ready yet. I hadn't sent it to, I was working with an agency at the time, so they were helping me with everything.
Yeah.
But it was pretty much done. I knew what I wanted to do. I knew the concept of the drive-by, what it was going to look like. But my lawyers said, you can't do this. So 15 months.
Did you? Which was a mistake. Did you hope someone was going to call you? Or did you, from another, did you hope? Oh, someone did.
Yes.
Okay.
So we were actually, Natasha and I could say this.
Yeah.
No problem because it's 1,000% true. And we met with a company in Toronto, same company in Ottawa. I don't know if they really knew what they wanted us to do, but they were very interested.
Yeah.
I think you know Paul Kay.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, so I sat down with Paul Kay, Julie Adam, and
Rogers.
I was fans with fans of what he was all about and how he does things. And at the time, and now everything's changed in terms of radio. I don't hear from him anymore.
Yeah.
We met with them in Toronto. We met with them in Ottawa, and it was an opportunity in Calgary. I was in Arizona for 6 months during COVID. My wife and I escaped there. And had a lovely time.
Nice.
Everything was
That's
shut
a
down.
Nice escape.
Yeah. My wife has family in Arizona, so we housed that. And I got a call from a station in Calgary as well. And I had asked them if I could do the show remotely from Montreal, and they said no. And I said, I'm not moving back to Calgary.
Yeah.
And again, the money, not worth it.
Not
in terms
enough
of
to
a,
go.
I don't know, a move. Yeah. And like you said, well, maybe we'll see what we could do about the moving costs and all. So I had two opportunities. Then the podcast started. Then COVID pretty much hit during the podcast. Then I started to open up about my thoughts on what was going on and asking questions, not telling people what to do, but asking questions. Then I lost my sponsors. Then everybody on the face of the planet that worked in radio unfollowed me.
Yeah.
And that's it.
All right. So let's clear this up.
Yeah.
Let's
I'm not an anti-vaxxer.
Okay. This is real. Like Ted and I talk about this all the time, and I said to you off mic before, what used to be considered expressing an honest opinion is now controversy.
Yeah.
And Ted and I believe that the one
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
10% of the population on both sides of the political divide scream the loudest and drive the narrative and can get you canceled from things and scare sponsors and scare, you know, prospective employers. What was it? What did you say that set those the world aflame? Like, why is it that people think you're an anti-vaxxer?
Yeah, I was doing Instagram lives every night.
Yeah.
And I started them in Montreal during COVID.
Yeah.
Then when we went to Arizona, I was doing them every night. I was there for 6 months. Imagine, we were supposed to go to Scottsdale for a week and a half.
Yeah.
I left December 26th. We came back June 26th. I abandoned my home and everything.
And
my wife was working remotely.
So if I'm not mistaken,
yeah,
you had a lot of people watching those.
One night, the highest we had was 2,400 people.
That's
insane on Instagram.
It's like
you can't even get 10, 20 now if you go on. Never did I say, never. As a matter of fact, I challenge people all the time and say, find the clip, because there's no clip. I said, I was on Humble and Fred, same thing. I worked with Humble and Fred many years. Humble Howard introduced me. I love Howard.
Yeah,
he introduced me as Freeway Frank, the anti-vaxxer, will be joining us in 45. And I was like, I told my wife, and she's like, don't go on. And I was like, no, I'm going on. I go, I could take it. Anybody could ask me anything they want. They could say anything they want.
And he's a friend of yours, Howard?
Well, he's a guy I worked with for many years. Go back and watch that episode. I mean, I'm not Chris Sky. They had Chris Sky on, right? And then they had me on a couple of months later. And they were asking me questions the same way they would ask him. And I was like, what are these people talking about?
So how did people come to that conclusion?
I don't know. Because I was questioning everything during the pandemic.
Okay.
I was against the passports. Vocally, vocalizing that every day.
Not passports, not the actual passport.
Vaccine passports.
Yeah.
I try not to say the V word or the C word because if not, the algorithms will pick it up and Poseidon will have a tougher job editing. You were asking
The passport.
So I was like, I was against it.
Yeah.
Using passports to get into places. I thought it was silly that you had to wear a mask walking in and then you take a mask sitting down.
Right.
And then I was like, are people losing their minds? Nobody's asking questions. So all I was doing is asking questions about it. I brought on several people. As a matter of fact, I started at the opposite end of the spectrum, Terry. I started as the biggest germaphobe. Okay, not quite Howie Mandel, saying, you got to wear your masks. Like, it was March 20th, a week after, 5 days after. I had just flown back from Vegas. I was like, we got to wear our masks. Then months went by, and I started questioning things because things didn't make sense to me, the whole mask wearing, the whole that, right? And then I was actually considering getting the vaccine. I don't even know if anyone knows this. When I was in Arizona, they were doing it outside of Diamondback Stadium, wherever they play. I was going to go. My wife goes, let's think about this some more. And we asked questions and we read things, watched things, asked doctors that I knew. We made a decision. But never.
Due diligence, in other words.
Imagine that, okay? Yeah. and I never said these words, don't get vaccinated. Never did I say those words. I said, we should be able to question and we should be able to have, remember, free will, and remember, choice. Pro-choice.
Okay. Yeah.
And having an opportunity to do what you want with your body. Remember
bodily autonomy.
Bodily autonomy. Remember all that? No. Not when it comes to this. So of course I was questioning it even more, and I was coming on every night saying this makes no sense. The curfews make no sense. The way we're treating people makes no sense. And I was very vocal about it. And people turned on me. Sponsors turned on me. I had so many people that respected me during my years of broadcasting who unfollowed me on social media, which I did take personally. I'm always like, who cares? But still today, there's so many people that think I'm some whack job right wing Like, and I'm like, no.
You're so
yeah, but a couple, and a couple of years out, like, couple of years out, Frank, increasingly you were asking the right questions.
I thought so. I mean, now looking back,
yeah, of course,
well, no one's talking about it anymore. No. It's like, oh, isn't that convenient?
I said to Ted in the car, I was on board with all of it. My wife and I got married on March 12th, 2020. We call it COVID Eve. And 2 days later, we had canceled everything. And we were sitting at the, you've been to Blackcomb?
Yes, of course, Whistler. Yeah.
We're sitting in the village, Frank, at Blackcomb, at the lift in Blackcomb, me and my wife, all by ourselves. We were the only couple staying at the Four Seasons in Whistler because we were trying to do some kind of honeymoon because we had to cancel our plans, wondering what we were going to do, wondering whether I was going to lose all my money, my investments. I think the stock market's going to crash. Mm-hmm. Like, we forget the fear of the, you know, from March 12th to, you know, we flew home on the plane and I said to Jess, and I had a heart condition, so I was terrified. We got on a plane and everybody was masked and everybody was trying to stay away from each other. We had my wife wouldn't let me go into the stores to shop. She didn't want me near people. I have a younger wife, so she didn't want me, you know, because we didn't know enough.
We didn't know.
I was washing my bananas. We had a mat by the door. We take off our clothes when we got home and throw the.
We did the same thing.
These are the poison clothes. Put them on the mat. Like, when you look back at it.
Ridiculous.
It just is, it's just madness. And to your point, and I started to question it when we were on the airplane, because you had to wear the mask to get on the plane, but you could take it off to eat. But as soon as you weren't eating, you had to put the mask back on.
Yeah. And that's it.
It doesn't,
I don't know, it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't, like, I'm not a doctor, but that doesn't really compute.
Yeah.
So looking back on it, the questions that you were asking and Ted was pointing out that people screamed about back then because they were scared, I think, now make a lot of sense.
Well, I was right from the get-go. I was like, I was on board with the guys, those three eminent scientists who wrote the Great Barrington Declaration. Mm-hmm. Protect the most vulnerable and let the rest of us get on with our lives. And my spider senses first went off when people started snitching on each other. The snitch culture, hey, they're having a poker game over there.
Yes. Yeah.
You better call the police. Yeah. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Well,
is this, East Germany in the 1950s?
Well, I must admit the passport reminded me of, do you have your papers?
Because that's exactly the way they'd ask you.
It kind of reeked about that a bit. And I think, in retrospect, as Ted points out, when you look back now, that's not what you were doing.
Not at all.
You were just doing what
the
due diligence.
But I was shocked, Terry, about when I'd listened to stations like CJD and how they were vilifying people and just throwing everybody in the same category. Well, you're anti-vax.
Yeah.
I even heard from some other people, former colleagues of ours, Frank's a whack job. Frank's an anti-vaxxer. I never told you not to take it. I'm not against vaccines. I was against this one because I wasn't sure about how it worked, and I was asking a lot of questions, and I was confused by many things.
As is your right.
As is my right.
A mob mentality came after you.
Yeah, and mob a lot of mentality. People ended up turning on me. My closest friends are still with me today. I lost a lot of friendships.
Really?
A lot of business associates. Were
they ever friends?
Yeah, probably
Were they
not.
Ever friends?
No, probably
you know,
not.
People that... You know, Ted and I have had this conversation on each of the podcasts this season so far. People have, you know, because Ted was questioning like you were.
Yeah, I know. I saw Ted's.
Yeah, and people said to me, how can you be friends with him?
Yeah.
I said, how could I not? I love the man. I've known him for 40 years. I know exactly who he is, what his character is. He's allowed to question things and have another opinion.
Yep.
And you don't judge people by that. You don't vilify people by that. Unfortunately, in this day and age that we live in, people do. I've used this example a bunch of times this week. You know, if Agnes thinks that, you know, you should ban this book from the local library, she thinks she has the power to have the book banned from the local library, never mind what the whole community thinks.
I'm Agnes, and I have a Twitter account. Yes, get that fucking book out of the library.
Get that book out of the library. We live in times that are just... it's madness.
It is madness. And what that showed us, I think looking back, it was a good thing that it happened.
You think so, eh?
Well, for me at least, because it showed me all the people I no longer want to associate with.
Right.
All the people that fell to their knees immediately. That's not to say I was never saying, calling people sheep, demeaning people, using any type of derogatory term when talking about people who would immediately follow what the government was telling them. I was just giving people an opportunity to voice their thoughts on my lives.
Yeah.
And on my podcast, I put on some guests that were highly controversial. The Viva Fries, the Vince Guzzo.
Viva Fries, terrific.
He's fantastic. I don't even think he's controversial. But
he's not. He's very intelligent.
Right? He's a very intelligent guy.
Yeah, he's been in here a lot, Poseidon.
Yeah. You guys should actually have him on your pod. Yeah, you would love
him. He's terrific. Yeah. That's a great idea. Yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
I've had him on three times.
Yeah. Have you?
And his wife, who's a neuroscientist. I had her on, Marion, about a month and a half ago. She was great.
He's a Montreal lawyer, and he's very outspoken, and he's very pro-freedom. Yeah, he's terrific. And he's smart.
Yep.
He's got a lot of common sense.
A lot of common sense.
Yeah. So I got the vaccine because my doctor told me to.
But that's okay.
And you don't hate me?
No. I love it, Terry. Why am I here? I was shocked. Look, I'm going to be honest.
What?
I've been wanting to invite you guys on the podcast.
Oh, for God's sake. Come on.
For the longest time. And I was telling my wife, I don't know how to go about it. And I go, I don't know if they're part of the...
Frank.
I go, I know Ted and I might be on the same side. I don't know. I don't know if I ruffled any feathers.
That's not who I am.
No, I know. And I know.
That's not who I am.
I know.
And I lament the fact we had Christopher Curtis on an episode in this season, and I was telling him the story. You know, I'm good friends with the prime minister, and I will tell the prime minister, I shouldn't say that. I will tell my friend when I think he's full of shit. And I don't agree with a lot of his positions. And I don't want to get into that now because that's, I'm going to send us down the wrong road. I also was a massive fan of Mr. Mulroney's. Mm-hmm. Mr. Mulroney was very kind to me on a number of occasions. I had a phone conversation with Mr. Mulroney while he was in office that I will never forget to the day I die. It's the only conversation I've ever had with a man who ended the phone conversation by saying, "Terry, I have to let you go. I'm having dinner with the Queen." That will never, ever happen to me again. And you know what? Those people, like you, like Ted, like Viva Fry, like, man who got fired from Fox.
Tucker Carlson?
They're sons and fathers and uncles and brothers. They're human beings.
They're people.
The fact that they have different opinions. Today, you can't have an opinion counter to what someone thinks without them taking it personally and screaming and yelling and trying to get you canceled or pulling their support. The world is upside down.
It is.
We used to be able to have discussions, and I loved them. And as Quebecers, I have a good friend named Sylvie Brunetta, and her first husband was a rabid separatist. And we would go to dinner at Sylvie's, and 8 or 12 or 13 or 14 people be around the table, and I would be one of the few English people. We'd all be screaming at the table. You know what happens when you have a dinner with French Canadians?
Yeah, of course.
Two people talk, and then the next two people talk louder. And, by the time you're done, everybody's... And when it was over, her husband would see me to the door and give me a hug and say, "It was so much fun. It was so good to see you. We got to do this again soon."
What happened to those days?
What happened to those days? And as Quebecers, we should know better.
Maybe this.
Because we've been doing it for years.
Did this happen to those days?
Well, I agree.
How big a part of it is that?
I think it's like you said,
everybody's got an opinion now and they've got a platform for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they think their opinion is paramount.
Do you view it now? Well, you said it was a good thing. It cleaned out your closet.
It did. Eh? It made my circle smaller.
Yeah.
And when you get older, years go by, your circle does naturally become smaller because you realize the people that are there for you because they like you, Terry, they like you, Ted, they like you, Frank, and the people that are there just because they might get something out of you because there's some radio personality.
That's especially true if you have a profile.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I did learn that. Yeah. And look, I think we're better off for it. My wife and I talk about it all the time, thankfully, her and I were on the same page. But yeah. I think even if her and I were not on the same page, I told her, I said, Steph, I love you so much. I would respect the fact that if you wanted to take it or I didn't or I did, whatever. But there's no conversation anymore.
No.
So that's what? That's the scary part about
why
it.
Why didn't you phone me? I'd love to be on your podcast.
Yeah, I'd love to have you
on. Come on. Have you changed your
approach? I have no season, so it's continuous.
Yeah.
You can come on anytime.
Okay,
how about tomorrow?
Okay.
Have you changed your approach to the podcast, Frank, because of what happened with the pandemic, and are you rebuilding in terms of sponsors?
Yeah, I have three sponsors on with me that are committed right now, and lots of interest, people coming back on. I tell everybody off the top, I'm very open about anything I talk about. Like you told me at the beginning of this conversation, Frank, can we ask you anything? And I said, absolutely. I'm 1,000% open book. I don't hide anything because when you start telling lies, you get caught eventually.
100%.
And that's not who I am. And that's not the way I was brought up.
Nope.
So I'll tell you exactly how I feel.
Nothing worse than a hypocrite.
Nothing worse than a hypocrite. If there's ever, I always tell people, if there ever somebody says something that I said, you know, like, Frank said this, come to me and ask me. Don't listen to other people because people are gossipers. And they
just tell me the truth, right? If you know, like if you want to, you know, if you're uncomfortable sponsoring the podcast.
Yeah. Oh,
just,
that too.
Just say that.
Yeah.
Just say, you know what? It's not my thing.
Right.
And people used to, often people would say that to me, you know, when I was on the radio, people would say, I don't listen to you. Say, that's okay. That's why the radio dial's long. You make your own choice, you know. And one of the things I like about podcasting is people choose to come to it.
Yeah.
You know.
So imagine what kind of a low life you have to be if it's a more complicated way, a more complicated platform to get to listen to Terry and Ted, to listen to Freeway Frank, and they're there and they hate you.
Yeah.
Imagine what's wrong with you? You're here? You're still trolling me?
Going out of your way to hate me.
I mean,
I think that says more about them than it does about us.
What I like is you could say, you know, you should write a letter to my boss. you should complain to the company.
Yeah.
Well, now they complain to the sponsors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, that's...
Well, it's taking...
That's like snitch culture.
Yeah.
It's the same sort of...
Exactly.
Taking money out of your pocket.
Yeah.
So to answer your last question, my podcast is free form. The reason why I called it the drive-by is I thought, you know, so a drive-by.
Yeah.
Compton.
Yeah.
But shots fired, figurative shots fired.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted the original logo to be the front door of my house with bullets on it. And I was working with One Milk, Two Sugars, Double Shot Agency. They go... Oh, no, we can't do that, Frank.
Yeah.
We can't. So we went with the logo that we went with. But that was always my idea because if you come on, I want to be able to ask you anything.
Yeah,
I want to talk to Terry DeMonte and what people really want to know about Ted Bird. What people really, and I want to be able to talk about anything.
Well, that's the joy. One of the things that I learned, you know, it was we have to say thanks to Pantelis and Mike Ward because when I was retired. I forget how it happened, but I think it was...
I think Mike said to Pantelis, there needs to be a Terry and Ted podcast.
And we went on the podcast. We went on the podcast with Pantelis to tell the story of my departure. And then we ended up in this room to start the podcast. And I thought, I don't know how this works. What is it? You know, what do we do?
Fortunately, Poseidon was here to steer the ship.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's such a different world. But one of the great things is A, there's nobody hovering outside the door saying, I want to see you at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
And B, you do what you want, how you want, when you want. And you hope that people enjoy it. And if people enjoy
it. And people do, Terry.
Yeah.
People really do.
Yeah. I think so. We've had a lot of nice feedback. And I always say to Ted, you know, for a little Montreal podcast, there's a lot of people that to check it out, and that's quite gratifying.
When I got the bum's rush at my last job, there was a lot of social media feedback that said, thank God for the podcast, so we can still get you guys.
Yeah.
Because him and I were doing a show on that station as well, and they canceled that show.
You were doing it on Saturdays, right?
Yeah, because it was a lot of fun because it was, you know, it was a reminiscent of the Terry and Ted days, which is a lot of years ago now. And, you know, it was Ted's idea, and he said, you know, would you like to do it on Saturday? And it was easy for me to do, and we had a lot of laughs and a lot of fun. And people really seemed to enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't setting the world on fire.
But well, we weren't setting the world on fire because it's a relatively small radio station. But we doubled the numbers for that time slot.
People
so that's pretty
to
good.
People seemed to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And people asked me about it. I said, well, Ted doesn't work there anymore. So there is no Saturday show. So what are you going to do?
No, so what's next?
Well, we're doing it right now.
Yeah, we're doing it now. I'm not. I'm certainly not waiting for. You know, you and I talked about this outside. I was going to say off the air, but before we got started, we were talking about there's, you know, the business that you and I worked in doesn't exist anymore.
Long gone.
And
it's sad.
It really is sad. It is sad. And I know, you know, there's probably people listening saying, boo, boo, hoo, shut up. But you know, it was something we loved. Yeah. It was a bit of a creative art form that I just loved. And I remember, you know, the days when I would drive to Toronto and you get to Cornwall and you'd like check out what Cornwall Radio was doing. You get to Brockville and you'd want to check that out. And, you know, like when I lived in Winnipeg, we'd drive, you know, across the country, you get to Brandon and the stations would start to come in. And every station was different. Every station was a representative of the community they were serving. Mm-hmm. And now they've turned it into Spotify.
That's it.
You know, radio stations in Montreal are having their music programmed out of Edmonton.
Unreal.
I wasn't like you guys. I didn't know early on that I wanted to be in radio. I kind of fell into it because I took a journalism course and ended up getting an internship at a radio station. So I went into radio. If I'd get an internship at a newspaper, I might have become a newspaper man or TV station. I might have gone into TV. But what I do remember, talking about the magic of radio, late at night when I was a kid, trying to get, living in Fredericton, huge Boston Red Sox fan, trying to get one of the stations from Maine to listen to the Red Sox.
Mm-hmm. Always better on a cold night.
Yeah.
Radio waves,
yes.
They travel farther.
Yeah.
Like in the winter, when I was in Winnipeg, I never forget this. When I was in Winnipeg, at night we could listen to, I think it was KSTP in Minneapolis. And when I got it, I was like all excited.
Yeah.
There it is.
I did the same thing with New York stations.
I think
it was 1010 Wins.
Yeah, 1010 Wins.
Typewriter that was always on in the
radio.
Yeah. And you'd get it. And you felt like you traveled momentarily to New York.
Right.
You know, it was really cool.
One of the things I loved about baseball on the radio, it was one of the only instances where dead air worked.
Yes.
When there would be the big pause between pitches, and all you would hear is the crowd in the background.
Yeah.
Or the fan at the back of the Olympic Stadium.
But those, like, guys like Dave Van Horn knew how to use dead air to effect.
Vin Scully was good at
that. Yeah.
Well,
he was the best.
Yeah,
Duke Snyder also has his color commentator.
Frank, let's talk about how does your day work now? Like this, one of the things that I find...
I get up late.
Yeah.
Well, do you? I sent you a DM on Instagram. Yeah. And I was like, are we still on for today?
do you get up late? Because I
go to bed late.
Oh, you still do that? You still go to bed late?
Well, because I would always be up at 3:45, 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I've got in, I guess because my wife works, you know, I get up with her around 7:30. And I retire. Being retired is not all it's cracked up to be, you know. For me, it's like I don't know what I would do if we didn't do this, you know. Because I don't play checkers, I don't fish, I don't golf, I don't do any of those stupid retired guys. Not stupid. If you love checkers, I'm sorry, but you know, like how is your day structured? Because now you have the podcast and
So I do the podcast 2 days a week.
Yeah.
So on Sundays, I don't know if you knew this, but I'm like the Bob Barker of Playground, which is a casino.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's cool.
And I host all their game shows in both official languages.
Very good.
Not the Ganawagi language, English.
Is this on site?
This is on site.
Oh, that's neat.
So every Sunday I'm there, and in French and English, I host the game shows.
Was that complètement bilingue? I didn't know
oui,
that.
Trilingue.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Italien.
Parlo anche l'italiano, sì. So I do that on Sunday, and then Monday is a podcast day. Tuesday, tonight, I'm at Playground. They do a big event. And anytime they're giving away big amounts of money, I'm their host.
Yeah.
And then...
What's a big amount?
$25,000. You have to come and check it out, what they've done there. And the people, the community, the Mohawk Nation, I know you know are fantastic.
Yeah. Yes.
And if they like you, which I've heard you say many times, you're in.
Yeah.
If they don't like you, then you're not in, and you're you know, like, because you're on their land.
Yeah.
You're just a visitor, but they'll welcome you.
Yeah,
you show respect.
Show the proper respect.
Yeah,
yeah. And
so it's a great facility, And so Wednesday, again, is a podcast day. And so that's my four-day week, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And then the rest of the time, I have my hobbies.
Yeah. What are your hobbies?
I love golfing.
Oh, you do love to golf. Okay, that's good.
I haven't
good.
Golfed much this week because of the winter. And I play drums. So in my studio where I had my podcast, cool. I have my drums set up. And I'm a big poker player.
Okay.
So, and I'm a avid poker player. Yeah. I love poker. I don't play online. I only play...
Do you play high stakes?
I wish I could, but my wife wants me to keep it respectful.
Do you play over Playground?
I play Playground only, Or when I go to Vegas, I play at wherever I head over to there.
What's the biggest money you've ever won?
Playing poker?
Yeah.
$52,000?
Jesus.
Yes. Yeah. Murphy. Wow.
That was back in 2014.
Wow.
Ask me how much money I lost. Worst four-day session, $26,000.
All right. Wow. Well, you're still 26,000 ahead of the game.
And that's when my wife told me.
Yeah.
It was in right before we got married.
That's it.
12 years ago. She goes, if you continue playing online, I'm out. I can't deal with these waves, you know, up and down.
Does your, when there's 52 grand on the line, does your ass pucker?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good.
Yes.
I just wondered about
my
that.
My ass still puckers when I play 1-2, which is a very small game. But I think I like to consider myself a student of the game.
Yes.
I drive my wife crazy because on YouTube, that's all I watch. I watch videos. I break it down. Now all the kids are learning Game Theory Optimal, GTO. There's way more to it than the way they used to play it back in the day. Yeah. So I'm trying to keep up by learning and watching all these videos.
Yeah,
it really is an art.
It's a long way from getting shown the game by Uncle Al.
Oh, yeah. It's a completely different game.
Come here. I'm going to show you how to play cards.
I love it. Terry, honestly, it is a fantastic game. I use my social skills to help me at the table. I have great reads on people. I watch a lot of those videos
that's
where you
so
see
cool.
investigators, you know, asking questions and these
watching
types of
body
rooms,
language.
Watching body language, and it's helped me.
Let me ask you, I'm curious about when I see the poker thing on TV, I don't hang with it because I'm not a student of the game or that fascinated of it by you. What? not as into it as you are, but I'll see the guys with the ball caps and the sunglasses and the ball caps pulled right down.
Right.
And
they're just covering their
but
their
that's
eyes.
Isn't that kind of cheating?
Well, a lot of people, especially a lot of the old school players, have talked about this and brought this up, and they want now. There's one specific player; he just wears one of those N95 masks, and we're way past COVID, and he just wears it just to cover his face completely, so you can't pick up any.
So there's
tells,
no tells,
right? Because the tells are pretty much all facial.
Yeah,
I never wear glasses.
No.
I just try to stay as stoic as possible, and. I try to...
That's part of the challenge. Of
that's
it,
the challenge,
it?
And I try to be polarized so they don't know, am I on a complete bluff or a complete...
Can you point out a couple of tells? Like, what do you look for? What do you see? What are some giveaways?
One of the biggest ones you'll see amateurs do is look away quickly. So when the flop comes, and Daniel Negreanu, one of the top poker players, talks about this in his masterclass, but I knew about this a long time ago. When the flop comes, those are the first three cards.
Yeah.
So those are the community cards, and everybody gets two cards. Then there's the turn. That's the fourth card. Then there's Fifth Street, the river. When the three cards come out, you should be watching the player you're up against or the players you're up against. The biggest tell is this one. They will look at it, and they'll go like this. So they'll go like this. The flop comes, they'll go. And right away, they'll look at their chips.
Yeah.
That means they hit. Now, there are good players who do reverse tells. I do that sometimes, and I have... absolutely nothing. And I'll bet out and they'll fold thinking that they might pick up that. So you have to be
interesting.
You have to keep watching. That's one of them. Looking and then looking away.
How about this one?
Pocket aces. Yeah. Terry, let me tell you, if I play poker with you, I could probably tell the exact two cards you have based on the fact you're lighting up like a Christmas tree. Okay.
Or this one.
For fuck's sakes. It's a tough game.
Yeah,
and there are a lot of great players.
I don't have the nads for it. I just, you know, I can't. I can't. I just can't.
It's great, though. It's life to me.
Are you producing your podcast?
I do everything,
So you book the guests and you...
One-man show. Yeah. I used to work... I had an agency I was working with. Now I only use them for when I get a social media brand ambassador type thing. I decided to do it on my own to keep costs down. I told Pantelis the same thing when he came on my podcast a month ago. And he said, you know, you should get somebody like an intern or something. I go, yeah, I've been meaning to do that. But I don't want to also be the guy like that radio corporate radio guy abusing the kid and saying, you know, work for me for $50. I don't want to do that.
You're like me and Ted who, you know, we'll be having a conversation and we'll say, hey, we should have so-and-so on.
Yeah, that's how I do
that's
it.
How we do
it. Yeah, and sometimes, Tara, sometimes I will contact people.
Yeah.
They'll say they come on.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys ever have this issue. And then they don't come on.
They don't show?
No. Oh. Like, they just say they're going to,
And
they keep writing them, writing them, and they don't respond anymore. And so I have no idea about that one.
Ted and I have a no-begging policy.
Yeah.
It's like, you're in, you know, thanks for coming or not.
But most people have been great and committed. So when they say they're going to be there, they're going to be there. So.
We have to say thank you to a couple more sponsors. You'll understand this, Frank.
Of course.
Hey? Are you okay, Ted? I thought you were going to pass out there.
I have to cover my nuts.
Now you're going to have to explain that.
We went to Mersin Automotive yesterday, and I got my summer tires on and my winter tires stored. And Kara Mersin said to me, by the way, you need 5 new nut covers. And I said, 5 new nut covers.
And us being the high school kids we are, we were like,
I don't even have 5 nuts. Oh, they're nut covers for my wheels, apparently. But those are the kind of details that the Mersons pay attention to. Detail and honesty, two hallmarks of the Mersin automotive business. They've been at it for 3 generations now. Ben Mersin started the business back in around 1970, I think. And then when he retired, his son Mark and Mark's wife Bonnie took over. And then when they retired, and apparently they're just on their way back from Mexico, where they've spent a grueling several months. When they retired, their daughter Kara and Kara's husband Celso took over. And now they run Mersin Automotive on Saint-Jacques west of Cavendish, where tires are their specialty, but whatever you need done for your automobile, and they can do them all. They can do old-school internal combustion engines. They can do electric cars. They can do hybrids. They have expertise in each and every area of automotive mechanics. And best of all, you can trust them. That's why Terry and I have been going for well over 25 years now, I think, Terry. Going on 30 years.
Absolutely.
We've been doing business with the Mersons and speaking on their behalf, and we would not speak on their behalf if we didn't believe in them. Mersin Automotive, Saint-Jacques, just west of Cavendish, and online at mersinauto.com.
And a thank you to the folks at AccuTech Electric. I encourage you to go to the website. This is another family-run business. This AccuTech Electric was established in 1995 and is headed by Tom, who's a second-generation master electrician, a family-run business. And on their website, the first thing they talk about are their core values about providing clients with honest, reliable, quality service. They do industrial stuff. They'll also look after you at home. For example, one of the comments on the website says, if you're in need of excellent and friendly service, quality electric work, AccuTech Electric. They saved my mom in a bind and went out of their way to make sure she had a warm home to stay in. I highly recommend Tom and Trish and their entire team. A family-run business, well worth the call. And as Ted was saying about the Mersons, this is something that we've talked about for most of our career. We've always spoken, you know, I don't know if it was deliberate or not, but we've always ended up speaking for family-run businesses who have these kinds of values.
We spoke about it during this podcast, and we talked about when radio companies were run by families.
Exactly.
As opposed to the giant soulless corporations who run it now.
Yeah. They'll do industrial, they'll do stuff for home, they do commercial work, anything that has anything to do with electrical, AccuTech is who you want to call. And by the way, as we were saying earlier this morning, if you've got electrical work, don't call Uncle Pete. Go to AccuTech.
What about Uncle Frank?
I don't know about Uncle
Frank. I'll bet you Frank's nano could rewire the house.
If he were still alive, maybe.
Yeah. AccuTech Electric, AccuTech. .ca. That's AccuTech.ca.
Are you second generation Canadian, first generation? Did your folks come from Italy or your grandparents?
Yeah, so my folks came with my sister through the Halifax Harbor all born in Italy. My sister was born in Milano, and I was the first one born in Montreal.
That's so cool.
So from the north?
Yes. Well, yeah. My mom's from Milano,
yeah.
Northern,
yeah.
And my dad was from Puglia.
And they settled in St. Leonard?
No, we settled in Rosemont. We were at the corner of Bélanger and 31st.
Okay.
Just about three or four long blocks towards the Olympic Stadium in the East End. And then we moved to Montreal North.
Okay.
And then when I decided to get into radio, that's when I had to work on that accent. That's why it's kind of there, but it's not.
Yeah, yeah.
I was married into a St. Michel family for several years.
I think I remember you telling
me that. Yeah, I still have clothes that smell like the Miron Quarry.
The cooking that was in the family, Northern style more
well, than... Well, with my nonna, who passed away many years ago, it was Pugliese, so Southern style.
Yeah.
But a lot of fish, a lot of obviously pasta plates, but from the South. My mom is more Northern, ossobuco, risotto, stuff like that. But my mom's older now, and now she just wants us to cook for her.
So. Are you good at it, Frank?
Can
you put a good sauce together?
Sauce, yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I could do that.
Yeah. Your wife, you said, is from Calgary. Is she Italian?
She is, this is interesting, half Danish, half Jamaican.
Wow.
And
wow.
So her dad was born in Trinidad, grew up in Jamaica, my father-in-law, and he is like British Jamaican.
Okay.
So white guy, and who grew up in Jamaica. Tough times, let me say. Some of the stories he's told me. Wow. Wasn't easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And have you spent any time in the old country?
I have. And I was there in 2018, 2019, right before COVID. And we're going this summer in June for 2 weeks. So we're starting off in Milano because my cousin is getting married. Then we're going to San Benedetto, which is south of Rimini on the Adriatic Sea, to see friends of ours. Then we're going to Lake Garda.
Yeah.
My wife just booked 4 days at a very expensive hotel. Nice. She sent me, and I was like, really? Are you nuts?
Enjoy
she goes, it's my birthday. She's turning a big birthday.
Enjoy every minute of it, Frank. Those are rare. That's my favorite country to visit. And that side, the Adriatic side, is also
amazing.
So beautiful.
And if I could ever recommend the place, go to Puglia, Bari, Polignano, Monopoli, Trani, gorgeous places. The food is to die for, and the people even nicer. Yeah.
I'd like to go to Puglia, please.
Si, senor.
Frank, I could talk to you all day because we both have a lot of passions in common.
Yes.
I can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast and being as honest and open with us and telling the horrific stories and the good because they are. They're, shitty story.
You've been through the grinder.
Yeah, you really have.
Thanks, guys.
And you've come out the other end, and the podcast is called
The Drive By.
And thank you for bringing the cannoli.
God
bless you.
Les Delices Lafrenais.
Molto grazie.
Where are they from?
Les Delices Lafrenais.
See you, sir.
Five great Montreal locations, including St. Leonard, Rosemere.
Nice.
Brossard.
Yep. West Island?
And West Island, West Island.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I remember because we all had our favorites.
Yes.
And sometimes, you know, like the Poutine guys would come visit me, but Lafrenais would always come to
visit. Always come.
And you would always
come. And I was always come next door to bring
it. Yeah, you would always come with cannolis for us, which I always
appreciated.
And as you know, I live in BC, so.
Not much there besides milestones, Earls, and cardboard food. Yeah.
You wanted to go to the Cactus Club? I do not. Thanks.
Good wings back in the 90s at the Cactus Club.
Yeah, but like the radio business, those guys have all been bought by hedge funds.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't need to really use real ingredients. Just use that. Are we going to do the tweet sheet?
Oh, yeah. Shall we?
Yes. Okay. Frank, do you know about the tweet sheet?
No.
Okay. We just pick out three funny tweets that we share over the course of the show, like this one from @TheHype. Comedy filmmaking in the late 90s was great because it was only required to revolve around two types of movies. One, those where a hot girl was considered ugly because she wore glasses. And two, those where a guy fucked a pie. From @VladChalk. Math problem. I have three apples and I'm traveling towards you at 17 miles an hour. It's not really a problem, more of a warning. Apple time, bitches. And from @RustyCoach, shut the fuck up about your nutrition app and eat this brownie, you pussy.
That's That's the tweet sheet. You can't hear that anymore on the radio.
You used to be able to hear that on the radio, and I would save those salty ones for the podcast.
My thanks to Poseidon for producing the show, as always, and a big thank you, of course, to our title sponsor, the UPS Store, and to Sugar Sammy. Don't forget to go to his website, sugarsammy.com, and follow him on social media, for God's sake. It's so much fun to follow him. And to Accutech and our friends at Mersenne Automotive. Saint-Jacques, just past the corner of Cavendish.
Thank you, Frank.
Thanks, Frank.
Standing by, the Terry and Ted podcast has been brought to you by the UPS Store Canada. The UPS Store near you is locally owned and operated by a member of your small business community.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.